I have been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while, and I appreciate your patience with scheduling because I know that that's been something that I dropped. But I'm going to begin with this. As far as Urban Dictionary is concerned, bougie means people pretending or think that they are high class, and but they are really not, or don't realize they aren't, end quote. That's the Urban Dictionary definition of bougie.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to get your definition.
Well, okay, first of all, I think we have to tell people why you're even bringing up bougie, or would you like for me to define it, and then we explain why you're even bringing up the word bougie?
Well, I will talk about it here in a second, but by all means, you're more than welcome to. Like I said, it's a dialogue. But yes, there's obviously a reason that you know why I'm asking for that question. So whichever way you want to take it. But first and foremost, bougie. What does it mean to Nadege?
Okay, so Nadege August is a French name. I was raised both in Haiti and in France as a child. My father's Haitian. From the island, the Caribbean island. I think people know Haiti now because of the earthquake, unfortunately. Yes. And France. So to begin with, so French is my first language. And the word bourgeoise always meant higher class. And it's been denigrated as a joke, not as a joke, but it's been reduced to just being someone who thinks they are, but they're not, because the traditional bourgeois has lots of money. It's the upper class, right?
Sure.
So I decided to make a play on words because people assume they just started calling me, oh, you're so bougie. And I never understood what that meant. And when I found out what it meant here in America and the Urban Dictionary world, so to speak, I took a little offense, and then I thought, no, why not embrace it? Because I believe that your mess is your message. So if that's my mess, being a bougie is my mess, let's have fun with it. So I created this, you know, here we go, a web series that is based on the adventures of someone who is bougie.
And at the moment, you're 3 episodes in, is that correct?
Yeah, well, here's what happened. I shot 3 episodes as proof of content, although I have 12 episodes written. And I was not able, as of yet, to find interest, as in getting it properly developed and all of that fun stuff. I have dropped the ball on it, too, because life just got ahead of me and I found other creative outlets. I mean, it's a project that's still in the works. I've not stopped writing it. And these things take time, you know. People often think that shows just happen overnight. And no, they take years sometimes to develop. But these 3 episodes on Amazon Prime, so if anyone has Amazon Prime, they can check them out, are there just so people can see what I do and what my quality of my work, from the writing to how I like things shot. I like for things too, because I'm bougie, to look as good as possible and project well. And it did have a screening at the Chinese Ramen Theater, and it looked incredible in a beautiful big screen, because I remember I absolutely insisted on having cinematic quality to it. That's it in a nutshell. That's where I am with it. I was able to get into a lot of debt doing that.
Sure.
Personal debt. I did a little crowdfunding, didn't raise a lot. So hopefully, you know, if I go that route again, it'll work out. Who knows?
In the name of the program, and again, it's on Amazon Prime, it's available for people to see. Their webisodes, I think they're called, but it's Bougie Dilemma.
The name of it. Yeah, and people, it's so funny. People often misspell bougie also. They spell it B-O-O-G-I-E, which is boogie. Bougie is B-O-U-G-I-E. And of course, Dilemma has 2 M's. Not everyone knows that. So that's that.
Now, according to your IMDb page, it says that you you know, you gave us a little bit of background, but it reads something to the effect that you're Brooklyn-based, and then I'm assuming you moved out to Los Angeles. It was that, when did that, if that move happened that way, when did that occur for you?
Well, Brooklyn born, actually. So
Brooklyn born, sorry.
parents met in Brooklyn. So yeah, and I was in New York. So when they split, from the ages of 4 to 14, I was outside of the country, came back at 14 permanently, and finished my high school and college and graduate school there, and my undergrad degrees in communications. My master's is in dramatic arts. And around the time I graduated in 97, I was told that unless I can sing and dance, I wouldn't get work in New York, which was Broadway. And Broadway was saturated with musicals. And it was true. And there were soap operas. And that was the extent of what was shot in New York. So I remember being up for a contract role on a soap. And it was, I think, Another World. It was amazing. I'll never forget that first taste of the possibilities. I got there via subway, lugging my clothes. And by the time I was done with my screen test, they sent me home in a limo. And I was sharing a limo with one of the regular actors on who was already a contract player. He goes, "Wow, that is a good sign that they sent you home in a limo."
And how old were you at that point?
I was 22, right out
Okay.
of grad school, and I was told. And so basically, I'm watching the news that weekend, and I think on Monday it was announced that the show NBC was canceling Another World after 25 years in the air. And I was so depressed after that. I said, "You know what? New York doesn't want me. I love you, New York, but you obviously want nothing to do with me." So I packed up my bags and drove cross country, and that's how I ended up LA, and I've been in LA, like calling it home, for 14 years now. So
Okay,
that.
let's go back to the pain, because I really want to get to the pain of it. Because I think one of the things that I noticed in your show, because I did happen to check out the three episodes that are available.
Oh, and what do you think? I'm putting you on the spot right now.
Oh, they're terrible. No, I'm kidding. I will answer that in a second. But I wanted to go back to that point, and I think it's something to the effect of, we do live here in LA. I'm LA based as well. I am by no means an actor or anything like that, right?
Right.
But the highs and the lows of your profession as an actor. So, and you describe a second ago feeling like you're on cloud nine. You get a small taste of what it could be, and then the rug is pulled out from under you.
Right.
At that point, being 20 something, early 20s, did you have enough experience where you had a thick enough skin to be able to ride that, or to ride that out and be okay? Or does it just crush you? And if it does, what propels you to then say, all right, the door got closed, I want to move on to the next thing?
Well, you know what it is? It's so funny because I'm just almost so, I don't want to say immune to it, but it's just become part of the job now to just go, it's just imagine for the layperson who's listening to this,
Yes.
spending your life going through a perpetual state of interviewing. Interview is for us actors are called auditions, but it is an interview, truly, except that your material happens to be you, your instrument, your person, given to you that come out of your mouth. Okay. That's neither here nor Can we continue? I was in the middle of.
You were in the mid-sentence, but yes, we were talking about the development of us,
Yes.
the immunity to that process of
Right.
interview.
Exactly. Thank you. So, yeah, we get to the point where it just becomes part of a job, to it's just going to be part of it to consistently interview. But the fact is, sometimes when you give it your best and you are told that it's just between you and someone else, and obviously both parties, if they made it through 50 people and they narrow it down to the two of you, and there's that part of you that just wishes it's you, you did a great job. You can't imagine why they would go another way, and they go another way. That's when, the dangers of all sorts of negativity can affect your life, you know, the depression, the sadness, and all of that. I'm happy to report that I'm in a place where I'm okay with those, you know, moments now, where I just have to trust that I'm in the right path. In fact, when I've tried to walk away, I get pulled back in. I have moments where there are glorious things that happen unexpectedly that tell me I'm in my path. One of them being that this spring I took a job out of town. It was a play and I did a show there in Desert Palm Springs at CV Rep, Coachella Valley Repertory. It's an Equity house. And Equity meaning it's a union for the people who don't know what that is. It's the Sure. theater union for actors versus SAG, which is everyone seems to know SAG. But anyway, and out of the blue, sometime in September, I got a message saying that I was nominated for an Outstanding Supporting Actress Award. I didn't think much of it only because I'd been nominated twice before for other stage work and went through the craziness of like the red carpet, it's exciting, you know, the expense, the dress, the makeup, you know, the big old glamour. And then being there, having your name announced as a nomination, you're walking in, you're very important because you're one of the contenders, right? So you get a lot of attention. And then once your name is not announced, it's like, but it's amazing. People just forget you're even alive, you know, because then the attention goes to the person who does win, which is okay, I suppose. So for this one, for some reason, I just said, you know, I'm not putting myself through that. I'm not going to go to the ceremony. It's nice to know I was nominated. I have tickets to the Lauryn Hill concert at the Hollywood Bowl. That's what I'm doing instead. And wouldn't you know, I won.
Of course.
Yeah. But I got this beautiful award that says, you know, here's your name and here's what your, you know, outstanding supporting actress. So a little thing like that just kind of gives you hope. You go, you know what? I'm not in this for the wrong reasons. I'm in it because I love it. And I know actors who refuse to go on stage because it's a different set of circumstances. It's like you're live. You don't get to go cut. Can I go again? Can I try again? You know, you have to have the preparation and you have to trust your skills and your craft to see you through, to gauge, to have this beautiful symbiotic dance with your audience. That energetic hit that happens right then and there is just like nothing else on this planet. So, you know, there's that. Whereas with a film or a television show, you don't know until it's been out and reviews come, and you just really don't know unless someone reaches out to you and said, hey, I saw that episode you were in. Good job. But so, I focus on what I can. And the other thing is I'm learning. This is very important for all the creatives out there. I'm in a profession where someone else almost has to give me permission to practice my art.
Yes.
It appears that way. But guess what? You can create your own work. And I hear that a lot. And believe me, it is not easy. Everyone says, create your own content. Yeah, do you know how many people are creating content and how many actually get that big break? You know, it's a small handful. So you have to focus on the joy and the fulfillment that it gives you. You know?
Now,
yes, go ahead.
Yes. So you moved to, from New York to LA. Do you have a support system when you arrive
None
to help take care of you?
Whatsoever. That's the other thing that's amazing about my journey. I am and my eyes just landed on this word. I hope your podcast is not going to bleep me. I feel like I'm a badass. Because
I am shocked and offended. No, I'm kidding. I talk a lot of trash here, so it's okay.
Okay, good. I'm a badass because how many people can say that they just got up, packed their car, drove cross country? Now, granted, I had a friend from graduate school because a lot of my peers did that move as well at different times. So this friend who was from grad school with me, he already lived here. So this is where he was from. He had done the opposite. Like he went to New York for graduate school and then moved straight back home as soon as he graduated. Didn't even try the New York market. What my advantage was that I had some New York credit. So I wasn't walking to LA with like I fell off a turnip truck.
Right.
So I had an agent in New York and I asked them if they had any relationships out here. They gave me the name and number of three different people. And so my friend and me little Saturn. I had a Saturn at the time. And we just drove 3 days. We took turns, you know, when one slept, the other one drove. I got to LA. I had rented a room in someone's apartment, got settled. First thing I did, believe it or not, at the time was get a fax machine because I knew that, like, that's how you got your audition materials.
Now we're dating ourselves, but okay.
Yeah, but it, listen, 14 years ago, the fax was very much alive. That's all we had. I mean, this whole computer, this is all new.
Right.
So we did that. And but that shows to me, I look back at this, let's face it, this girl who was 22 at the time, who had the wherewithal to go, this is what I need. Like, my mind was very business and focused. Like, I came out here. I know no one. I'm here for work. I'm going to work, period. And I made sure that everything I had to do revolved around my purpose here. See, I tell everyone, you got to know the purpose behind why you do what you do. And I didn't know it at the time, but my actions certainly supported that. And I remember my friend kind of admiring me and going, wow, like, aren't you afraid you're wasting like whatever savings you have on things like that? I'm like, these things are necessities. They facilitate my job. Just like moving to LA, you got to have a car because auditions are all around town. Like, in the morning, I can be in the Valley. And then by 3 o'clock, I need to be in Santa Monica. And then I have to be back in Hollywood. There are days that are like that. I like, my car is my second home.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I move here. I have no one. And it's funny, 14 years later, I still don't really have a support system where I have people I can go, you're my BFF and you're my family. Many of my peers gave up. They got married, have children now. They got regular jobs. They moved back to different states for work, which is fine. It's their choice. I had that. I could have had that choice too. But I don't know. It's like an illness with me. I'm addicted to what I do. I love the game. And you got to stay in it to win it.
Yeah. Now, you moved to LA. You don't have, you know, you don't have folks, but you do have, I mean, folks that would care about you or you would consider a support system, but you do have experience. Now, for somebody coming into LA who, you know, with similar passions and pursuits, would you consider LA to be currently a toxic place to come to work in as far as the, you know, acting? Would you consider it to be a place you got to be wary of? Or do you think that we've come far enough where it's safe for people to come in and plug into the industry?
That's a loaded question, only because it can be toxic if you decide to join the party life, if you decide that like the way for you to make it is by going out every night and finding where the hot spots are and networking and, you know, hanging out at night. And I'm sorry, nothing good ever comes out of hanging out at night. It just was never my scene. Don't get me wrong. I did go to a few parties and I realized, you know what? I'm too exhausted the next day to show up for work because guess when the auditions happen? They happen during the day, not at night. And there's nothing, again, okay, so you meet a famous, I don't know, producer. Like, they don't know your work. I've always felt like, let my work speak for what I do. So see me in action or see my, you know, link to my reel or something. And then we can start a relationship versus someone, because who doesn't want to be an actor in this town? You don't think this producer is like not bombarded with a lot of people vying for his attention for the same things? So it, again, it depends on how you want to make it. And now there's this whole thing with influencers, YouTubers. That's a whole, I didn't know that was acting, but apparently there's that too. Right. It's, anywhere is as toxic as you make it. You decide. Because LA is, just like New York, a fascinating dichotomy. Everything that's healthy and health conscious is available. And everything that is horrible for your health is also available. So you choose, are you going to go the health way or are you going to go the not so healthy route? It's entirely up to the person. But I say, know why you're here. And there's nothing wrong if you think you're like drop dead gorgeous, stunning, beautiful boy, beautiful girl, ripped abs, and that's going to be your the way you market yourself, then go for it. But that's not me. I'm not bikini bathing suit girl. You know, that's just never going to be me. So I don't really have advice other than saying, know your purpose and just every so often check in with yourself and make sure you're staying on your path. Know your path. Everyone's path is different.
Yeah. With regards to, and thank you for that, because I think it is important to say that, you know, a lot of it, you know, depends on the individual, what their you know, what their end agenda is going to be, whether it's going to be for the purpose of I want to be part of the lifestyle, or I want to be part of, or I actually want to be a creator, and that is my goal, and that is what I want to achieve. And each path is going to lead you, and the paths diverting from it are going to lead you into different places. And it seems like you've had the discipline of self to know what you want and to continue to pursue it and put all of the other noise to the side, if I heard you correctly.
Yes, now, that's exactly right.
Now, you're in LA now for some time. You asked the questions about what did you think of it, and I think Bougie Dilemma, and I will, you know, give you an opinion here in a second. But one of the things that I've heard, there's this podcast that I listen to, and it's called Friends Like Us, and it's primarily Black women that talk on the show, and many of them are comedians, several of them are actors, and they talk about, you know, the concept of you know, their experiences as Black women in the industry and in comedy. And many a times they discuss throughout the variety of shows of what parts are available for women of color, what typecasting is available for, you know, people of color, where they're limited to, and also where they're trying to break free, and also paying, you know, honors to people that are trying to break out of those molds. So I guess my question to you is, coming into LA back then, and then your experience in the industry through the years, have you felt that the industry pigeonholes people of color to play certain parts, or do you think that or is it more open now?
This is an interesting question. It fluctuates. It appears to be more open now, but it's not really. And I'll tell you why in a second. So when I first started, when you go through training from drama school, also known as trauma school sometimes, depending on what your experience was like,
sure,
you sort of, you believe, and in your naivete, truly, especially if you come from theater, that I can do anything and be anything. Wide open. So at first there is that, and then you realize, oh no, the town, the nature of the beast wants you to be something specific. Problem is, they would decide for you what you can be. I remember I would go into certain castings and they would ask me literally, I'm just going to say this. Can you just like sound Black?
Wow.
And of course I'm like, what does that mean for me? You know what I mean? Like, I'm Black, but yes, there is a rhythm perhaps that's different, but this is how I speak. So visually I'm not enough. I also have to sound a certain way. Are you serious? Are you serious? You see how offensive that is, you know? And it's almost as if when you hear people who are non-Black, like white people, for instance, who love rap, and they try to sound quote unquote Black, I almost say, what if I said to them, can you sound white? You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
I wouldn't do that because I know how offensive that would be. It's just their choice of a way of speaking. It's a pattern. It's just what it is.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So yeah, so that's one of the many things. But I got to tell you, and this isn't to bring, we're not going to go politics in here, but the Obama years shifted things for me personally, because suddenly my speech was no longer at issue. Because this person was in as the president, he was articulate, all of a sudden they stopped asking me to sound Black, because it was like, oh, the president's Black, he doesn't quote unquote sound Black, so we don't need to act. Like, seriously, that is the best thing that came out of the Obama years for me, the fact that I'm like, no one wants me to sound Black ever again. So I'm like, okay, so that's an upshot. So that is a shift. With the advent of all of these new venues for content and dissemination of, you know, anything people create, it's interesting because there are more channels now, more opportunities to do your work. The pay has gotten, obviously, because supply and demand, law of supply and demand, is a lot worse. But it seems to me too, for some reason, it just feels harder. I don't know why that is. I'm in the throes of it. I haven't figured it out, but it almost seems harder to break now because opportunities supposedly are more available. I also heard someone say, so at the end of every pilot season or every year, at the beginning when they have new shows, there are studies that come through the Pew Research Center or other organizations where they look at how many Latinos have gotten TV jobs or leads in shows, and Asian Americans and African Americans, and the percentages are usually either improved or have not improved or have stayed the same. And I forget what my point is with this. So the percentages don't either change or don't, but what the certain producers or networks have figured out is, and it's interesting, they will start the show with certain quote unquote minorities as regulars.
A quota, perhaps.
Yeah. And then when the show gets picked up, suddenly that person gets replaced by a white person. They found their loophole. To this day.
So it's, we're going to kick off with the, with a mix. And then once we're popular, then we're going to replace with the white actors. Interesting.
It's just a little observation. And so that's just that. There's that too.
Now, granted, now I wanted to switch gears to a certain degree. Looking over at your IMDb page, if the first acting credit that I have here for you is 2000, and obviously we're in 2019, and it seems pretty much year or every other year there's an acting credit. One of the things that I've always wondered about actors is when I look at these long lists of acting credits, you're, I think, right now, according to this page, about 37 acting credits. That would make it seem to me that, hey, this person is a working actor. They're always out there. Mm-hmm. But my question has always been, even though they have those credits, can somebody live off of that? And I'm not talking about, being good, just comfortably.
Can
somebody be comfortable? Yeah.
So here's the deal. So IMDb has somehow become this legitimate, like people just swear by it. Mistakes do happen. There are works that you don't get, even though you were credited on the show reel, it doesn't show up. But also, let's not forget, there are so many other ways that talents are utilized. Commercials. I average several commercials per year. I probably have over 30 commercials under my belt. Commercials. Oh my gosh, thank you. I love me some commercials. We get commercials, so that's usually very lucrative. You have a theater. That pays as well, perhaps not as well as a commercial. In fact, there are TV shows that don't pay as well as a commercial. But they don't list commercials on your IMDb credit. They don't list, theater credits on IMDb. So IMDb is purely just for television and movies. So, yes, you can. I've been fortunate, knocking my head right now, or finding wood somewhere to knock, or thanking the angels of that bless me with work. I have been able to mostly act for a living. But I have other things that I do too, that I coach people. So there are ways to have work. And it wasn't always like that, of course. When I first moved to LA, I was an adjunct college professor of speech at several city colleges here in Los Angeles. So, and as an adjunct, it's part-time. I taught three classes a semester and off during the summer. So I was able to do both. And it got to a point where when the economy does well, people don't go to school as much. As soon as the economy takes a dive, people rush to get another degree or get that education they know they needed. So my department had a lot of, what do they call that, budget cuts. And it was easier to get rid of part-timers and keep just the full-timers. And so that's what happened. And that happened about 2014. So 5 years ago. And it's been wonderful. It's actually, you got to trust when God or either whatever you believe in, when it's taking you in a direction, you just go with it. I didn't panic. I didn't try to get another teaching job somewhere. I just went, okay, obviously, I have even more free time so I can do other things. And that's actually when I did Bougie. I used my free time wisely. So
would it make sense to say, and I know that, advice is not necessarily what we're here for, but would it make sense to say that one of the reasons why you have been able to thrive in spite of the ups and downs in the market and the industry is the fact that you have diversified?
Yeah, and you have to. And you know, support, I most actors I know, unless they're a regular in a TV series, and even then they try to get as much as they can because they're it's easier for them. Most actors, you will see them. I see people on regular shows all the time at the commercial castings I go to. You know what I mean? Like,
Interesting.
because even they know that's where the money's at. And why not? If they get, I guess they're the show's on hiatus, they'd rather work than not work. And suddenly you show up at a casting for, you know, a Honda commercial or something, and you're like, oh, hey, how you doing? How's that show? It's on hiatus. Great.
Right.
Thanks for being here.
Now you're LA based.
I
Now
am.
that's one of the things that's interesting. I have folks that are, you know, industry adjacent, meaning that I know people that, for instance, are carpenters or people that do electrical or they do lighting, and so they live and die by, well, they live by, again, you're talking about, you know, those months of the year with the hiatus times when there's no work, and so they kind of have to supplement their income in different ways. My question is, as far as production in Los Angeles, or in the Los Angeles County area or in Southern California, do you see that there's a lot more production coming back to LA, or is there still a flight out of Los Angeles as far as creation and work?
You know, I actually would love for your friends to answer that question because they would be the best people, truly, because they work very hard and they would have a more accurate sense of it. What I'm seeing statistically is that work is sort of available in New Mexico, also in Atlanta, you know, with Tyler Perry building these big studios. Lots of shows are shooting out in Atlanta, some in New Jersey, some in New York. So it's no longer, it's almost as if you really don't even have to live in Los Angeles anymore to do this, you know? But in terms of whether there's more work or less, honestly, I feel that these beautiful folks below the line are the ones who would probably be able to answer that more accurately.
Excellent point. All right, so let's get back to Bougie Dilemma, because you asked me, you know, my opinion of it a little bit earlier. And again, I just happened to catch it today because I was doing some research and preparing for you and I talking. One of the things that I first realized is that I often think that writers, well, you write what you live, right? And so I saw to a certain degree, perhaps, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but that the show is autobiographical to a certain degree. It's based on experiences that you're seeing as perhaps somebody who is dating in LA, somebody who is acting. I really like the interplay. I think it was the second episode where it's you as the main as the lead of the show, and an Asian actress, and she talks and she says something to the effect of, and I'm quoting incorrectly here, but the fact that they casted her in a commercial or a show because she's Chinese, and you turn to the camera and you say, well, you know, you talk about the race card, and there's an interesting interplay there, and I wonder, is this a conversation that actors have? Or another component that I like is where you and another actress are having a conversation about what I think I wrote it down. It was called
The breakup
the
diet.
breakup diet. Exactly. I thought, well, that's an interesting concept. I mean, I bet that's based off of a real conversation or perhaps something that actually actors talk about. And so, and then there's, of course, there's the date that, you know, that you go on a date with another actor and you guys discuss that, or you know, the gentleman that pulls up and very cavalier, like, you know, tries to pick you up, and you give a long monologue about, you know, a whole bunch of things. I enjoy the humor. I enjoy the quirkiness of it. But it, you know, more than anything, I guess the you know, my question is, are these right? Is what's on the screen, are they based on real life experiences that you're saying this, or are they, you know, where does that come from?
Well, you know, it's true. You write what you know, except my quirky worldview allows me to find the comedy and the humor in it and a lot of what-if scenarios. Now, the whole breakup diet was inspired by, and I didn't know this was an actual thing because apparently there is a book called The Breakup Diet. But it had nothing to do with, you know, not eating. It's basically some people, when their hearts are broken, they either starve because they're so hurt they can't stand food, they can't handle food, or they overeat. Well, I personally happen to be that person who, when I'm sad, I just lose my appetite. It just, no. But it's the best thing on the planet if you're trying to lose 5 pounds. So it's like this joke, right? And so I do remember running into this beautiful actress who works quite a bit too. We are, I call it casting friends. So eventually when you're sitting in the same audition room, especially for commercials have less at stake, where, you know, you get paired off with people, so you might as well be friendly to each other out in a waiting area. And after a while of seeing the same people, you end up either working with them or just feel like you know them well. You just kind of become pals, but not outside of the casting room. You just, every time you run into each other, you can chat for a long time. You can even go grab a coffee after, but that's the extent of the friendship. So I remember seeing her, but she was talking to someone else, and someone was like, "Oh my God, you're so, like, what happened? What have you been doing to lose all?" She's like, "Oh, you know, my heart was, you know, I just went through a terrible breakup and I stopped eating." And I remember hearing that and going, "Oh my gosh, I can relate to that." And so it basically, as I'm writing, and I'm writing all of these vignettes of life of an as an actor and a Black actress who has a weird name that people have trouble pronouncing, these little vignettes just pop in. And for me, those are things that happen in casting rooms. Do you hear vignettes of bizarro things like that? And so it just ends up inspiring me, and I shape it in a way that I think is entertaining. And so that's what that is. And as far as the episode called The Date, I can't say I will say I went on a date with a fellow actor, which is a big no-no in my book. And I did.
Advice?
Yeah, exactly. And I did do that one time, knowing full well that it wasn't going to go anywhere, but it was like, hey, why not get out there, right? And I remember him indeed being late and saying why he was late was because he has a child. And I was just like, oh my God. And it was true. I had known him all these years. He was one of these fellow actors that I always chatted with. We joked around, and we've even gotten paired off to play couples in certain casting situations. And going, why haven't you ever brought that up? Like, you would think that would be the first thing you bring up, like your child, right? And he just never did. So I played with that, you know, and the whole thing, my punchlines till this day, that is absolutely true. I don't share men, underwear, or my toothbrush. Otherwise, I'm very generous, but stay away from
I actually had that quote written down because I thought it was very cute. So no, I mean, like I said, I appreciate the quirkiness of it. And it also leads me to something that I have been seeing online is the fact that you alluded to this earlier, of the fact that you yourself can create. And of course, the question is always, well, where am I going to find the money to do so? Mm-hmm. And I think, but that you as a creator, you're not now stopped by gatekeepers that are the big studios, that you can go on your own. And there are venues like YouTube, there are places like Amazon Prime that you could put your content out there. You have a director credit, obviously, for the show. Mm-hmm. Was there a big challenge in you from the standpoint of directing and also directing yourself, if that's the way that it went about it? I mean, does the mind have to do a flip when you're the person behind the camera?
Yes. So the thing with that is, believe it or not, and a lot of people need to know this, the only directors who tend to direct actors, as in give them, you know, I don't know, feedback on their emotional chart or journey, or whether they're hitting a line right or whatever that is, tend to be theater directors. Television and film directors, and this is why they say it's 90% is casting, they are too busy worried about the technical portion of the program and where you're standing and the lighting, and they're constantly talking to their DPs. They tend not to give feedback on the acting at all. In fact, it's one of those things when actors think, oh, I need, when directors don't talk to them personally when they get a job on set, especially if they're a guest, they're always like a little panicky, like, oh my God, this person, that I didn't get any directions. I got no directions. They're freaking out. I'm like, no, it's because you're doing a good job. And in fact, I also know situations where actors just get fired. They just replace them with another actor because they weren't delivering what they wanted. But I go, wow, they don't even tell you, can you, they don't even give you directions. You just go to lunch, you get a call from an agent, your agent saying, I'm so sorry, you need to go home because they've just replaced you. You know, I've been on that end where I've gotten that panic phone call. Can you come to this studio right now, right now, right now? What? Nadege, whoever they hired, they got fired, and you were their second choice, so they're just going with you. Just go. I was like, what? That can happen? Holy moly. So you always have, I always say, and that's a Will Smith quote, always be ready so you don't have to get ready. Be ready so you don't have to get ready. And that applies in anything in life, I feel. You don't even have to be an actor for that to be true. So to get back to your question specifically, so as a director directing that episode, excuse me, what I needed to focus on was I knew my work. I knew I can act the hell out of it because that was my writing, right? And my job as an actor was already done ahead of time. So what I needed now was from a DP that I can trust to make sure that it looked great. And in between takes, I would go behind the camera, he'd replay, and I would see if I needed to adjust anything. And I basically self-directed myself. Like I can go, oh, in this take. And because I'm an actor, I was able to direct my actors too. So it is slightly different because suddenly you have to know more about the technical portion of the program, which was something I feel really empowered by having learned on the job. Like I learned all of that on the job. So that was like my film school, you know?
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the component of not pragmatics, but we all age. Do you feel that the industry is much more open to specifically women? Because I think one of the old adages or one of the things that I know, the little that I know about, you know, the industry is the fact that men can pretty much work until whenever. It becomes harder for women to find work after certain ages. Do you feel that is getting better? Is there still a ceiling there past a certain time?
I don't know. I feel like I have to ask you, do I appear older to you? Like when you say older, what do you mean?
I guess what I would
I'm 36 in real life. I'm not sure. I understand older women do have that fear, but I can't say I'm in a category where work is not available yet. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, I guess from the standpoint of what you've experienced, because to answer your question with regards to how you look to me, and again, this is, you know, my opinion, you seem like a person that has, you're in an interesting place. Specifically, the only thing that I've seen of you so far has been the Bougie Dilemma. But what I noticed was this is a whole person. This is a mature person who is in that in between where they're no longer in their 20s trying to figure it out. No, this is somebody that has lived a life that, you know, that has gone through some things, but they're also in that place where they're not going to be shifting into whether they're just going to be focused on their career or dating or whatever it was. Now, that was the impression from the show. So I don't know if that addresses where you're at. I just think that you're in, and as far as from what I saw, that you're at that interesting place where we go from being cute 20 somethings, so that's the reason why, you know, the people pay attention to us, to being mature and, you know, in whole as people before we then get into, oh, well, now we're older. Does that make sense?
I do remember the first time I got that call where they were like, you have a casting for a commercial where you have to play a mom. And I was like, oh, what? Right. Play a mom. I'm not a mom. And that was like, woo, what's that about? And then someone pointed out to me, that's actually where the money's at, because they need moms and all those things they advertise to children. There's a mom who's got to put that cereal in that kid's bowl. And I was just like, oh my God, ka-ching ching, you are so right. Because they can only advertise Coca-Cola and Pepsi to, you know, teenagers on skateboards for so many years. And there aren't that many. Sure. The need for it isn't that great. McDonald's, even fast food places, they have spots where there is always a parent when they're trying to get the kiddie meals, you know. So as far as that's concerned, yeah. And you are right. There is that weird thing now where my agent is pushing me to go like out for older roles, like even on paper that they say early 40s for. And even though I'm close to it, I'm just like, I go into these rooms and women who are clearly in that category or even older are the ones in that room. And while I'm okay with work, work is work is work. I don't care if somebody's going to be like, oh, yeah, sure, you can play. I'm like, yeah, I will. The check will clear. I'm in. But the problem is, I'm not getting cast as these things. So it's weird. It feels a little bit like, okay, are we wasting my time by pushing me in that direction when clearly they're not seeing me that way yet?
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's bizarre because it almost feels like I'm not working as much because I'm being sent out for things that I'm not right for, you know? So yeah, it's an interesting place to be. It's kind of frustrating. It's like that in between phase where I'm like, so what do I need to do? Do I need to shave my head, put on a few pounds? Like, what do I need to do to be there? And it's like, breathe, just be you and, you know, see where it goes. I'm not fighting to stay in my 20s. In fact, in my 20s, I remember getting feedback through, you know, when my agents would call and find out how things went. There was a time casting directors would actually talk to agents and give them opinions about their clients. They don't do that anymore. Basically, right. Nowadays, you just throw crap against the wall and see where it sticks, right? No, but one of the things they used to say about me, which was lovely, they were like, she seems really sophisticated for her years. Like her face doesn't match her level of sophistication.
I can see that.
Yeah. So that was always, so it was basically like I was always punished for being more mature and sophisticated. And then now that I'm technically in a place where that should be working in my favor, I'm still not quite there. I don't know what that's about, but it's an interesting ride. I'll see where I stick.
Most definitely. You know, when I saw you, and I don't know if you're aware of the show, but I thought she would fit perfectly with like a cast like in Insecure. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've caught on the show, but
people
like,
have said to me that Bougie Dilemma kind of felt that that's what that could have been.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess to a certain degree that I see some similarities. I think that you bring something a little bit, it's something different to the table. And again, it's proof of concept, right? So, right. I mean, I'm sure you're looking to develop that and everybody has their own stories. But just from the standpoint of, because again, the way that I see you, or at least from what I experienced here this morning, it's like, oh, okay, this is a person that has a lot to say and they're in that interesting time. Again, no longer being the cute 20 something, but again, not being the mature, well, like you said, you know, the mother figure. Mm-hmm. You're certainly not there. And so it is an interesting thing. Yeah. Okay. Let's switch gears here for a second, because you've created the way that I know you mostly is from your podcast. And I think you're about 25 episodes in or so.
Yay. A quarter of a century old. Yesterday, that's true. I released the 25th episode. Yes.
Fantastic. What I like is obviously the play on word, what the fuckery. That's what definitely caught my opinion. And also the fact that you're the people that you have on the show are from all different walks of life. And I've always appreciated the fact that you never know what you're going to be listening to about next. That's always fun. I don't like folks that get pigeonholed into just one theme. So I guess let's start with, at what point do you decide a podcast is something that that makes sense for me?
Well, what the fuckery? It came about in a very unusual way. So I was visiting with a friend who had met someone and who wanted to do a podcast. So she went out and got all this equipment and said, Nadej, can you please come test these out with me? And I said, oh, okay, sure. She had two mics. And I said, well, we need someone else. And she was like, well, I don't want to be the one talking because I want to see the technical thing, how that's working. And so she had a guest who was staying at her place. And it was a person who you weren't sure what gender they were. And turns out they became that transgender guest. So I said, would you think that they would mind if they talked about what they're going through? And I would do a mock interview and just kind of go ahead and just on the spot riff with it. And then she was like, oh, let's ask them. And they said yes. And sure enough, we go into this little room that was properly sealed. And I just started to, like, I finally put my undergrad degree to use, which was in broadcast journalism. And I said, you know, what the fuckery is going on with this and blah, 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 blah. And it just became that thing. And then when I was done, I was like, okay, great. Went about my life. Then she called me. She's like, oh my God, you're really good at this. You should consider doing a podcast. Well, thank you. But I had no idea. And I was just like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm an actor. I mean, so much the thought of having to do my own. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay. She said, no, you need to hear it. And it took me a while. Finally, at least I didn't like the sound of their own voice. And I thought, oh God, what am I going to hear? And I listened to it and I was like, oh my God, I am asking some damn good questions. This is good. And then I thought, all right, I need to step back now. If I'm going to do this, I have to know my purpose behind it. And my purpose has to be of service. That's just my own personal dharma in life, my own value system. If I'm going to do it, I need to know that the world is going to benefit from it somehow. And then, but of course, I also have to enjoy it. And then I thought, I'm a very curious person anyway. Like, I'm that person who'd rather discuss ideas and concepts rather than gossip about people. Like, I don't want to know what's going on with you. So pop culture, I'm like zero. Like, don't ask me who's Lizzo, who's doing what, where and how, but ask me about what's going on, concepts. You see what I mean? So, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. There's a lot of non-normative lifestyles, especially in LA, that we have access to, that we see, but we don't know how to talk about it. And I said, I'm just going to go up to people and be like, can you come explain your fuckery to me, please? In a very loving way, because my purpose is to create empathy. I feel like if we understand someone else's journey, we can shift our own attitudes. And my job is to just ask the questions, allow a conversation to flow naturally, and educate not in a teaching way. It's so interesting. I just use that word because I'm a former teacher. Wow. I'm kind of coming full circle in the spot here. To guide people into just hearing this information, and you choose to do with it what you will. So consequently, I've had a polyamorous couple on where I talk to the woman and then I talk to the man, intersex, LGBTQIA. We all know what the L is. We know what the G is, but I did not know what the Q and the T and the I was. And I is intersex. So I found an intersex individual to talk to. And turns out they corrected me on the pronoun situation because you say they to them. And my intersex interviewee turned out to be Amy Winehouse's addiction counselor back when they were female. So they used to be a woman. They were born intersex. A doctor performed some terrible surgery on them, removing their anatomy. I mean, it's just a horrible story, but it's there for the listen. And it's also that more than one, it's not just this person's story. Apparently 8% of the world's population has experienced that, and they are intersex, and they are stepping up and rising up. So I say I am an ally and things like that, because at the end of the day, we can put our moral, religious stamps on things, but these are still human beings. This is still a person. So I cover everything, and you're right. It's like, you know, my latest episode was in astrology, and I have some really good ones lined up too. So yeah,
exciting to hear. I mean, along things, you have shows on polyamory. You had a spiritual advisor on. You talked about transgendered veganism just recently. So you really are trying to, it's all of these things that perhaps, you know, not the everyday person has access to, but they have, you know, they have knowledge of it through you. It's a matter of just being curious about other people and wanting to ask questions and not placing judgments on whatever the answers may be.
Exactly. Exactly. And also, you know, I kind of feel like my show is becoming a bit of a Wikipedia, like an audio Wikipedia. Like, you don't of course, it'd be nice if people subscribed and listened, like, die hard every week. And most people do, it seems. But you can pick, like, Let's see. Oh, this is an interesting topic. I need to know what that means. Vedic astrology versus regular astrology. Those are two different things. Let me hear and find out what that is. Never heard of Vedic. So you can like pick and choose your topic. So it's like an a la carte menu here.
Now, when you are not directing, producing, acting, in doing a podcast, I mean, what do you do to decompress or to just take the, you know, what are the other things that you enjoy doing?
Well, gosh, you're going to think I'm super boring. Like, guess what? On my night off, I'm going to the theater tomorrow. I'm going to see a play because I love plays. When I'm not actively seeking a husband, that's a job in itself. I've been joking about that a lot. I'm like, you know, your typical LA girl with the yoga and the hiking and the this and the that. I enjoy a nice cocktail. I like, you will find me. I there's this great bar and I'm not going to say the name because, you know, I don't want people following me and
making no creepers, fellas. No creepers. It's okay.
Yeah. But this bar is a great bar for solo drinking. So I can go there and stop, have a cocktail, talk to my friends who are the bartenders. Like they're now my friends because by default, and you'd be surprised at how many other single people are hanging out there. And we all just end up chatting with each other and catching up and then leaving. It's kind of cool. It's like my local Cheers, you know. I write as well, as you know. And and, you know, I have a couple of coaching clients that I help with their accent reductions. A lot of them are voiceover actors who need to have better clarity of speech. And so I know, I feel like we're going to hang up and I'm going to, oh, I should have mentioned I do this and that. But yeah, I'm physically active on the time off because I find that physical activity is good for the mental, for your mental balance. And sure. And of course, as an actor, I have to keep my size zero. So hello.
Size zero. Not for me. I'm a tamale guy. I'm willing to give up the best. Now, as far as let's talk, you know, without getting into too much of the personal, but I guess I'm curious. I have been married now for a long time.
The name. Has it been that long?
Well, I mean, she and I have been together for 20 years. I mean, what? I've known her half my life and very happily married. So sorry, I'm off the market, ladies and gentlemen. I don't judge. Anyways, but I've been together with her for a long time. So obviously that means that I have not dated in decades, literally.
Yeah.
So I guess you know, my query is, 30-something gentlemen out there, LA gentlemen, a good stock? Do we have to kiss a lot of frogs to find the right person? What's the deal going on with the fellas out there?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, God. Oh, I have no idea. Seriously. I have decided, you know, just when you think that you throw a new rule, like to eliminate the potential weirdos, you get yet another set of issues that come with that. I decided to always date a decade older. Even when I was in my 20s, I wanted someone in their 30s. Now in my 30s, I want someone in their 40s. But what I'm finding, especially with being this LA proper area, because you run into a lot of people who are pursuing the things that you're pursuing too, and they came here for a creative or an artistic pursuit, I'm finding that it's not a good combination for me. My friends who are not in the arts, who are women, even they are like, they'll date an actor, but also go, oh, that is just so hard.
Because of the lifestyle that they had to lead?
Yeah, it's a lifestyle. I don't know what, I honestly can't figure it out, but I'm sticking to professionals, as in people who are not in my area of work at all. It's good for me to have a conversation about someone who went to the court to litigate on an immigration case. That's more interesting to me. I'd rather spend time with someone who from whom I can learn something like that versus an actor who's going to compete with me. Sadly, I only had one relationship where the fellow was an actor as well. And for some reason, he always felt like he had to compete with me. And I said, I would say, I'm a woman. You can't even go for the parts I'm going for. I can't go for your parts. Why do you even care that I'm working more than you? When you're working, I'm happy you're working. It was always that little thing where it's, I don't know if it's a male thing where they want to feel like they are the provider or they're doing better. And that's not the case. So that just made me go, you know what? That soured me to the whole thing. I've just got, just how about I not even date that person ever? But there's a lot of fuckery out there, you know, people who ghost, man. You've heard of that term, Hugo, right?
I have, yes.
And I would love to just like grab one of these guys who've ghosted me. And now, you know, ghosting is a word, right? Is a verb. And just be like, let's be on my podcast. Explain what that is. But one friend explained to me, who's now engaged and will be marrying soon, explained that when they were single, they tried the dating apps and they found that when they didn't really connect with someone, they wanted to have a conversation, let them know. And his friends are like, dude, don't do that. Are you crazy? Don't even waste your time. Just ghost. If you just ghost, they get it. And so he was like, I was ghosting because these are hard conversations to have. And I'm like, yeah, but no, it shouldn't be that hard. You know, what did people do before apps, before phone? They just stopped calling people? I don't know. So I think it's rude. I think you just kind of have to let someone know, hey, great time. Got to know you a little bit. I don't think we're going to work. So I don't know what's more painful, hearing that or someone just disappearing.
Because, you know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me. And again, I am completely talking from theory here.
Yeah, because back in your day, that wasn't a thing.
Right. And I also got very lucky that I found the right person for me very early on in college. But I guess one of the things that I've always wondered is, would older men, I'm 40 years old, would be, so I'm going to call myself a Gen Xer. Are Gen Xers better about that as far as to letting people know, hey, this is just not going to work out? Or is it a millennial thing or is it a man thing that we haven't figured out a way to have those conversations? And I guess the reason why it's relevant to me is because even though I am not dating, I am trying to raise a proper young man with my son. And I want to let him know that is not appreciated, that it puts a person, that you leave somebody, I would think, with unresolved feelings. Mm-hmm. It's just not a cool thing to do, dude.
Yeah, so I agree. And it's not even like the right way to handle life, because I'm a firm believer in how you do one thing is how you do everything. And if you think for a minute only in relationships do I just disappear, I guarantee you just disappear in other things in your life too. You don't step up. You don't do what you say you're supposed to do. Do you know what I mean? Can you see how that makes sense? That it's true. I can guarantee you, if you're that person who just escapes by not confronting something, then you're also not confronting things in other areas of your life. I can be wrong, but I just don't buy that.
I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, you know, during my career over the years, one of the things that I've always taken a lot of pride in is the fact that I'm the person that will always make the tough call. That doesn't mean that I would like to make them. You know, there are many times I've been in real estate for a long time, and every now and then with the market going up and down, you have to call somebody and give them bad news. You didn't get the house. It's going to fall out of escrow. Things are not going our way and whatnot. And there's a lot of people that shy away from that because they don't have the character to do it. And I always took it upon myself of being the individual that would make that phone call because I think it's forthright.
Yes.
Right. And so I would see that if I've, you know, when I coached agents or when I talk to other sales professionals, and when I see that they are not willing to do that because they just, you know, they want all the praise, but they don't want all of the flip side of it, it would lead me to believe, well, this is also how you act in real life, that you're not going to let the person know, hey, listen, as much as I've enjoyed your time, you know, the time that we put together, you and I are just not working out because we're not compatible. And again, I don't know if that's a guy thing. I don't know if it's a generational thing, but it's sad to hear that, well, that happens. And that, I mean, ghost is a term that we use it in the way that we do, because it's obviously a phenomenon that's happening and people are seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, I just, you know, I wish I had the answers, but I had an experience recently, and you know, the age is not even, sadly, a foolproof method for me. I went on a date, cup five dates, great dates in a row with a gentleman who was 47 years old. He was not in my field. He was, in fact, in IT, which, for all intents and purposes, he should be a geek. We end up back at his place, and I'm pretty sure I'm like, okay, he's thinking something's gonna evolve, come out of this evening, right? So I just had, okay, let's have this conversation. Is this what you expect? And he said, well, yeah. And I said, well, I'm not ready for something like that yet. We just met, and yes, we've spent a lot of time together for just this amount of time, but I'm just not ready to do that. And he goes, well, your definition of casual is very different from mine. And I'm just like, what do you mean?
He's a
And
47-year-old.
yeah, and I said, well, I'm not sure what that means. Like, to me, the act of sex is not casual. You know, and he goes, and I asked him, well, I said, well, okay, let me just ask you this, and just to try to explain my perspective, I said, so let me give you an example. For example, when was the last time you had sex? And he goes, last night. And I go,
Oh.
not with yourself, ha ha ha. I mean, with someone else. He's like, yeah, last night. And I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. What am I doing here then? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you're not being fair to this person. Why am I at your house? Why are you taking me out? Holy moly. Like, I was freaking out, like, oh my God, I'm helping someone. I'm being helping someone go through infidelity. And he's like, well, you don't know the nature of that relationship with that person. It's totally casual. And that's when I was like, okay, I gotta go. I got up and left. And of course, never heard from him again.
Interesting. Oh.
Yeah. Was that closure? Was that like I would have thought a 47-year-old man would handle it slightly differently or eventually call to explain themselves or not or whatever. So, you know, you just there's no real formula. You just have to just keep looking for your guy, you know, whatever that is. But I yeah, but it's looking good, you know. It's looking good for me these days, so.
It's one of those things, like I said, it's so interesting to hear that, because again, this is that's a completely what the fuckery is all that about, because
Right?
I don't deal with it. It's so wonderful. I will share a really quick story, and I tweeted about this not long ago, is the fact that I like to sometimes go to the movies on my own. And after going to see a movie, right across the street in my small town, there's a bar, and I go and I grab a seat, and I kind of just want to write down my thoughts, because that's when I do my writing over a drink and start jotting some thoughts down. And all of a sudden, a woman that I know who recently got divorced comes over. She's had a couple of drinks, and I say hello, and we start chatting, and we have start having a back and forth, and there's candlelight, there's drinks involved, and it would look like a date, right? And I live in a very small town, and I'm relatively well known. And although most people know that I will have, I am not afraid of sitting down with a woman and having a conversation, but I do still also got to think of the visuals of it. But it's all above board until the point where she starts. And she's had a few drinks of referencing, well, I've always appreciated you. You're a really good husband. I see what you do online, and then you praise her, and it's just very nice to see that you're so giving. And I wish there were more men like you. And the compliments start getting poured on, to the point where I feel like this is not so much about just two friends sitting down. I think that there's a come on happening here. And I get very, very nervous. I don't know what it is about, having affection of somebody who's not my wife. But the moment that I feel that this person is showing me that kind of energy, I get really worried.
As you
And
should.
yeah, and so I'm like, well, it's very nice to see you. I'm kind of just done with my drink. Please drive home safe, and I gotta get going. And the entire time, although nothing has happened in it, and it's just been a dialogue, I have this, just
Guilt?
anxiousness, yeah, and guilt about it.
Yeah.
So I come home, and I tell my wife about it, and she and I is like, that's gonna yeah, that happens, because you're adorable. And I'm like, you're right.
Oh, good for her. That's a
Yeah,
sweet
well,
answer.
thank you. It's one of those conversations that we have. But like I said, I don't know how I if all of a sudden something were happened to between my wife and I, and all of a sudden I had to date, I don't know that I would.
I know. Listen, I tell all these people who have found their significant other, I'm like, listen, you don't want to step outside and see the fuckery that's there. It's a whole different world, a whole different game. And I don't know that you, how did you meet your wife? Did you meet organically or did you meet through some dating site?
No, we were right before the revolution of the online revolution.
Perfect.
We actually met the old fashioned way. We met in college. And it was one of those things that she was just a cute blonde girl in one of my classes. I thought she was adorable and wearing short shorts. So why not? You know, my male gene kicked on and I asked her out and we've been together pretty much every single day since then.
Oh, that's a great story. See, that is a very fortunate thing for you. You just, please, I'm sure you realize how lucky you are in more ways than one. Guaranteed, there's nothing out there. Stay where you're at.
more ways than one. And I will say this, it's one of the things that I've always appreciated about my relationship is the fact that we do dialogue and we talk about all things. And I think that's one of the challenges that young people may have is the fact that they may not know how to have the difficult conversations. And it goes back to the ghosting talk that we had a minute ago. Over 20 years, you see a lot, you experience a lot with another individual. And if you are not, if you don't have the emotional intelligence to call them out on the carpet and be called out on the carpet, it will not work. My wife and I over the years have discussed money. We've discussed sex. We've discussed jealousy. We've discussed all of the things that are involved in making a relationship work. And some of those conversations have been heavy and they have been tough. And there have been times when we have questioned, what are we doing? But because we have such a strong foundation, we continue to go on regardless of, you know, the dims and dales of life. But if we cannot have our young people have the teach them the emotional skills to have those tough conversations, I don't know how people are going to be in long-term relationships from this point forward.
Right. Yeah. No.
You know, so so in that sense, I feel very lucky, most certainly, to be with her. But at the same time, I don't divorce people that I know. I don't envy them getting back out there and what they have to deal with, because I feel that there's a stunted generation of daters that they just don't know how to deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. Well, now you have
Yeah, no, lots going on. You know, I would love to have, you know, more dialogues like this. I have found you to be an extremely giving person. But I think one of the things that I have enjoyed listening to the most, even though you said, well, I'm not here to give advice, is the fact that I think that anybody that would listen to would have a few takeaways about what it's like to be disciplined in one's industry.
Mm.
What it's like to be somebody that has, you know, a mission statement, a personal mission statement, an innate mission statement that they say, this is what I want to achieve. And by hook or by crook, I'm going to make it happen. And I've appreciated that from our dialogue. I would get to the point now where I would ask you, what do you have coming up next? Because I think that there's perhaps a film that you've worked on that I may be coming out.
Mm-hmm.
What are you working on next? Where could people find you both as an actor, but also online? And then just, you know, tell us a little bit about your podcast and where they can find it. And I'll make sure that all of that is in the show notes.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you very much, Hugo, for having me, first of all. Yeah, and it's nice because as I'm talking to you, I'm kind of going, oh, wait, I actually have answers to this. Yeah, so I appreciate that you are acknowledging and mirroring back to me what I thought I heard myself say. So yes, there is a movie called Out of Time. It's science fiction. It's a movie where I am the number one lead. Yay.
Yes.
So we shot this 2 years ago and now it's being sold or at least marketed to the American film market. It's waiting for distribution. I haven't gotten word about whether it got picked up specifically for distribution. Don't know much about it yet, but that's still, it's what they call a post-production stage. So that's exciting. Look for me. I mean, once people see me on, if you go through IMDb, Nadege August, you know, my credits show up. You'll see a lot of, on my YouTube channel, I have a youtube.com/Nadege August, where you can see clips of every TV show I've ever done for the most part. So you'll see Criminal Minds and all these different shows. And most people, I'm one of these people that people go, oh, right. They call them, oh, snap people. Like, you look familiar. You look familiar. Oh, that's where I've seen you, which is great. Look for me in commercials. I have a BMW commercial running now on mostly online now. It ran its TV time course, I guess. And what else? So my podcast, What the Fockery. Well, I'm actually going to share this ahead of time.
Ooh, a scoop.
All right, big scoop. This is a great scoop. Do you guys remember Barney, the purple dinosaur?
Yes, definitely.
I love you, you love me.
I love, oh, I know, it's seared in my head. It was the shark doo-doo-doo-doo-doo of its time.
Right. So the actor who's inside of that costume, I met them. Now, you would think the Fockery is about them being Barney. No. Their Fockery is that they are now tantric sex massage therapists.
Ooh la la.
And
I dig it.
Oh, yeah. So there was an article that came out on Vice that basically accused them of being a male hoe, a male prostitute, charging women for this massage. And I got wind of it. So I tracked them down and I had them on the podcast. And his name is David. And David sat with me. And David shared that Fockery all about Tantra. Basically, it's like spiritual sex and blah, blah, blah. And the way he described all the different things he offers to women and his clients, I said to him, David, may I speak to one of your, he calls them goddesses. I need to speak to one of these goddesses, because I thought I need to meet someone who actually has paid for this service, right?
Right.
Sure enough, one of them agreed and I met her and I did a small interview with her as a bonus episode. And let me just say everything I thought I expected, because I'm guilty of stereotypes also. What I thought in my head this person would look like was not at all what she looked like. I did question whether or not she may have fallen in love with him. I mean, you just have to tune in for that. But what I'm having to do, David, I mean, I'm calling you David Hugo, is I'm actually going to use those special little episodes on, I'm creating a Patreon page as a way to have extra content for my people. I don't want it to become the show about this guy. But if people are interested in like just hearing the goddess, they can go to the Patreon site to hear it. Do you know what I mean? But
certainly.
But he is like the big attraction. So yeah, I'm super excited, but it's the controversy. Oh, and by the way, he is now in the costume of another popular kid show.
That is a scoop too.
That's
awesome.
A scoop too. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's about Fockeries and a couple of other shows I already have lined up. This famous casting director, the one who casted for the Gilmore Girls, I had her on, but not to talk about casting and acting, but to talk about her personal journey as a single woman who ended up fostering a baby and now is the mother of this child who's 3 years old. So a single mother by choice now. And it's a beautiful story because her intention was just to foster. And then she ends up finding her son. And the wild thing was the son does look like her. Like, unless she tells you she fostered and adopted, you would think that's her legit child. So that's a beautiful story.
Certainly.
And in the foster care system, something we most people don't know much about, I'm having someone from an organization talk about, explain what this foster care is, because it's different from adoption. I didn't know that there was a difference, but there is. And one of the producers of America's Got Talent, I had her on. She, you know what her Fockery is? She eats fire. She's a fire eater on her time off. So people do interesting things outside of their regular lives, don't they? And it's,
yeah, we're all very three-dimensional, and then that's the reason why we tune in, is to find out, you know, what it is, what's the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
Nadezh, yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I am looking forward to more, you know, more episodes coming from you on your podcast and everywhere else where you're at. And I'll make sure next time that I see a commercial you're in or a show to point that out to friends and family that I have.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. And of course, you have Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. What the Fockery or Nadezh August. It's all there. And Hugo, thank you so much for having me. And I love how we became friends just through Anchor.
Exactly. It's perfect. Nadezh, okay. Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye.